Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, it is I, Peter Dibdin, from the best driving school of motoring, BDSM for short. If you thought the seatbelts were a bit tight, you're incorrect. They need to be like that, as classified in the highway code, to keep you safe. I am here to introduce something called Rahulastapa. That seems a very short acronym. I don't know what it stands for. Nothing to do with driving, that's for sure. I understand that this is comedians chatting about stuff, but, you know, there is nothing, there's no room for levity when driving a car. I hope you will not listen to this in the car. The car is a dangerous weapon, more dangerous than a knife or the bomb that destroyed Hiroshima. So please turn this off if you're in a car. Concentrate on the road, or you might slam into a bus full of poor children and kill the lot of them. Careful what you're doing. It'll weigh on your conscience. Anyway, the guest this week is someone called Alistair Green. I have no idea who that is. He sounds like the kind of person who'd come up with a load of crazy characters, and I do not enjoy that kind of humour. If you will want to see more of me, however, or listen to me, why not tune in to Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun, which is recorded at 7:30 p.m. on Thursday nights, but is also available as a podcast or on YouTube shortly after that. I will be in every week giving lessons to female Stevie, and I hope you will enjoy watching that. It's free, and unlike my driving lessons, which are £45 per 20-minute lesson, or £120 for the full hour, saving you a valuable amount of money there. So, anyway, let's sit back and relax and enjoy Rahulastapa with Alistair Green, my fine friends. Please welcome a man who's got a big bushy moustache. It's Richard Herring. Hello, my fine friends. I hope you're well. Welcome to Richard Herring's lovely Sunday Tipping Point podcast. Tipping Point's all one word, of course. Though I was hanging around with Ben Shepherd and the other contestants on Tipping Point, which I recorded in July 2019, and to be honest, I can't remember who they are now. They call it Rahulastapa, because of Tipping Point, so I hope that's not going to catch on. I am on Tipping Point on
Sunday, the 29th, if you're listening to the podcast, it's already happened, but you can probably watch it on the ITV player. I can't tell you what happened, but look at me there, a little picture if you're watching the video. I was slim then, and look how proud and happy I am. Ben Shepherd's keeping two people between me. They weren't even in the show, those two. But in December, well, that's November 29th, I've just done a Russell Howard show. I'm going to be interviewed on that. I've done The Chase, which is on Boxing Day. There's Taskmaster coming out until December the 17th. I'm on TV all the time. Careful what you wish for. It's going to be. There's still a Point in the Celebrities in the can as well. So if that goes out in December, yeah, I win TV. What has been going on with me? Last night, you know I asked people if they've ever seen a ghost. Last night, I had a very weird night, interrupted night of sleep, and a proper supernatural experience that also I can completely logically explain. But I was in bed. I was very fast asleep. Now, my wife sometimes in her sleep shouts out, "No!" I don't know what she's dreaming about, probably reliving the wedding and wishing she'd just said that. But it woke me up. And because of the way she said no, I think in my mind I was assuming she was shouting at my son, Ernie, because that's often what happens. And I opened my eyes and looked and I saw Ernie walk into the bedroom, which is weird because he has a gate. He can't get out of his bedroom, but it was definitely him. He walked and he sort of stood there, but he wasn't looking at me. He was sort of looking off and I was going, Ernie. And it was absolutely three-dimensional, absolutely him. I reached out to touch him and he disappeared. There was nothing there. So I saw the ghost of my son, who I then had to go and check what hadn't died. And he was fine. And then I was woken up about an hour later by this really weird buzzing sound. And I thought like something electrical had gone wrong. And I was looking, trying to unplug stuff, and it was dark and I didn't want to turn anything on. And my wife woke up again. And it was a really weird, and I thought, what the fuck is going on? What is happening in this bedroom? And then my wife said, oh, I put a wasp in the bin earlier. I thought it was dead. So I think it was a wasp. But given my experience with dead wasps, here he is. Look, it's Brian Wasp. I haven't gone mad. It's fine. So that was, I meant to put a picture of a ghost up then. Is that it? Yeah, there it is. There's the ghost. That was the ghost that I saw last night. The other big news is Pompeii. They're doing lots more archaeology there. They discovered these two bodies. You know what they do? They fill that sort of with, I think it's some kind of liquid chalk they use these days. They fill gaps and then find out what was in the gaps and what was destroyed by the volcano erupting in Pompeii. This is a master and his servant there. It's all over the news. But I bet the guy on the right there never guessed that his penis would end up on the front page of the BBC news site. There, if you can't, there it is. There's his penis. In all, it's no one else has talked about this and mentioned this, but that's definitely his cock, right? I think I bet the only thing he thought as his body evaporated was, well, this is bad, but at least my total destruction of this volcano will stop any future archaeologists seeing my old fellow. And it will be so obliterated that if in the future any technology allows images to be seen all over the world, then one of those won't be my tiny, terrified todger. Well, he was a fucking idiot to think that, because there it is. There's his penis. There's his Latin Roman penis. At the last moment, I bet he might have thought, oh, shit, what if my evaporated body leaves a cavity in the ash and the perverted archaeologists fill it with some kind of liquid chalk to make a statue of me? And then my penis, which is what he would actually have called it, because he was Roman, is then preserved for all to see. Not all big and excited like I'd like it to be. I wouldn't mind, but just a little nub because all my genitals have tried to escape the disaster by hiding inside my body. So remember, if you're caught up in a volcano, cover up your genitals with your hand so no pervy archaeologist can take photos of you and your penis and then disseminate them around the world. Make it clear you're covering your genitals, not touching them, or there'll be photos that people think will say you approve you're having a wank in your final moments of agonising pain, which has happened to one of the other guys in Pompeii, and it's not fair. You can't win with archaeologists. They're the worst people in the world. Nobody else has mentioned that Roman cock apart from me. I can't believe it. It's hiding in plain sight. But they knew that it's on the front of all the papers. They could have put a little plaster cast of a fig leaf over it, couldn't they? There must have been one. There must have been. Anyway, there you go. There's my hilarious opening monologue. Hope you enjoyed it. So, my guest this week. Oh, look, the moustache is coming on pretty well. If you want to support Movember, and by this is... It's actually going to outlive November because I'm doing a film in early December and they've asked me to keep it. And I'm doing a character in Twitch of Fun who has a moustache. And so I might have to keep it for that as well if that becomes a running thing. But go to rahulaspa.co.uk/Movember if you would like to donate some money to Movember. All your sub money from November, all your badge money from November will go to Movember. Please support Movember if you can. It's when will there be an International Men's Day, though? That's my question. So talking of that, my guest this week is probably best known as the voice of the international man in Richard Herring's fantastic The Problem with Men book, the audio book version. He's not in the book. He's not magic. That's why we're all here. I gave him his big break. I'm sure he'll be grateful. But of course, he was also Man in Street on Series 3, Episode 5 of The MASH Report. You may have seen him there. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome Alistair Green. Here he is. There he is. How are you doing?
Yeah, all right, thanks. Yeah. Good. That Pompeii man, he looked like his knob had been cut in half, I was thinking.
It did. Well, I think it just, and it might have broken off. It might have been big and broken off.
Right.
When they were excavating him.
Well, you'd hope it wasn't cut off while it was happening. You've got enough. Imagine, of all the times to be castrated, Pompeii erupts, the lava's coming down, and someone comes with a knife, yeah. And you go, now, really?
But I think it just, he must have been a bit scared. He's in his corridor in his villa,
yeah,
with his servant or vice versa. I don't know which one of the servant is. His tunic's ridden up, hasn't it? That's what's happened there.
Yeah.
In the last minutes, tunic's ridden up. His penis is retracting, I think.
Yeah, it's a terrible shame.
It may
shame,
have broken
yeah.
off. I mean, yeah. You can have another look at it if you want. But
if you could send me the JPEG.
Send the close-up of that.
The ultimate dick pic, yeah.
It's kind of weird that they... I'm really surprised they didn't. It's undignified. I can't believe anyone noticed it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't. Just because it's a plaster cast and he's 2,000 years old, people think, stick his cock up there.
Yeah.
Who's going to complain? What about the dignity of death?
Yeah, put a pair of pants on him, I would have said. Yeah.
White fronts. Well, how did you feel when you got the call saying that you'd been chosen to be the voice of the men tweeting on international?
Well, you dream about these things, don't you? Yeah. You never imagine that it will happen to you when that email comes through from Richard Herring.
Yeah.
Do you want to read some voices in this book? This book I've hastily cobbled together
through lockdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're very good. I do recommend the audiobook, though. If you're watching this in November, you can buy the Kindle ebook version for 99p, which seems insulting. It seems insulting to put it down to 99p in the first month. Do you think? I think they should wait.
Yeah.
Like at but least
that's,
6 weeks.
I mean, that's the effect. That's the book industry now, though, where it used to be a joke, didn't it? Where when people publish a book, you go, that's going to be 99p in the bargain bin in next week. And now you go, well, yeah, that's the first week. That's literally what happens to books now. It's a pound on Amazon.
It is. Well, it sold loads. So, I think that, yeah. that so it did the job of all my cheapskate fans going, oh, well, I'll pay a pound for it.
Yeah.
I'm not paying more than a pound.
Yeah.
So I think whether you get more people than would buy it as a result or whether some of those people going, well, I was going to pay £6 and now I've got it for one. I don't know. It's a weird one. And what do you remember about being a man in street in Series 3, Episode 5 of The MASH Report?
I've got absolutely no recollection of that.
Was Series 3, was that the COVID series or was that the one where they...
I think it must have been a while ago. I think I might have been just a racist man on the street, I think. I don't really remember.
No, how?
If I remember rightly, it might have been a segment where I was a kind of, just a nasty racist man talking to Finn Taylor, maybe. I think it might have been that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad you don't remember it.
Sorry, that sounds
No,
so
I'm glad.
Bad.
I am glad. It's good. It's good. Now, look, you're very difficult to research. Like, A, you're the second guest in... I don't know if the standard guest is just slipping or what.
Yeah.
But you're the second guest in the row who hasn't got their own Wikipedia page. And that makes my job very difficult. Because you just look at Wikipedia, find out where you're born,
come
up with a couple of cracks about the shitty town you were born in,
find
out what your dad did, find out what your first job was. Nothing.
Well, we could do the town, and then you could do a couple of zingers about
I like to look it up. I then go to Wikipedia and look that up.
Well, yeah, then you could find some facts about it and then work that in. You could do a little bit. Yeah. But now it's hard because I could tell you, but you might not know much. I grew up in Romford.
Romford in Essex.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the ford over the River Rom.
That's right. See? Yeah.
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 That's what I know about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Romford. Yeah.
It's, yeah, but there's a few Essex girls there.
Yeah.
There are a few Essex girls in Essex.
Do you think you would have come up with that given more time as well?
I think that was just the white heat of the moment.
Yeah, improvisation.
That just came.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, you got to go with it. Yeah.
Don't think about it too much. And then just bang, something as good as that comes out. What did your parents do for a living?
My mum was like a special needs teacher.
Can't do anything with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't use that.
Go on. my dad works for Xerox, or like a computer. He was an early like computer programmer.
Okay.
And in the 70s and 80s before it was a real thing. And then he ended up doing something with computers. I'm not really clear on what it was.
You know, I found out my dad went to the University of Manchester in the 1950s. And only at his 80th birthday, I discovered he worked on one of the first computers in the country.
Manchester
University. And he was a computer programmer. He can't use his iPad now. He can't.
Oh, same. Yeah, he hasn't got a clue. Yeah.
But he was actually doing, you know, massive papers about computers.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable stuff.
Yeah.
So it's weird when you find that about your own. But and then I still can't. I was fascinated at the time. But, you know, 4 years has passed by. I can't remember.
Yeah. I can't my kids say, what did granddad do?
Oh, he did say.
Yeah.
If only he was still here to tell us.
Yeah. I wasn't really listening.
But there we go. And I sort of had you pegged as this. See, like, this is my guess about you, because I had to guess. I thought you were, having looked at the stuff you do now, I thought you had probably worked as an actor. You kind of maybe went to drama school. I thought you might have gone to public school, but I don't think you did. I think we did establish that before we started. I think you went to drama school. And then you were an actor, I thought, who kind of thought, I'll do some cheeky little sketches. But you...
None of that. No. I went to a normal state school in Romford. I never went to drama school or anything like that. I did a load of different jobs. When I was a teenager, I left college and I was actually a money broker. I was a trainee money broker when I was like 17 or 18, which is a real Romford thing to do, because I had a mate who worked there and said, oh, you just want to work in this thing, it's easy. And I went out, I found it really hard, and I didn't last very long. I was like really burnt out. And then my next job straight after that was a Pizza Hut delivery driver. Like, I had a total meltdown at like 17. I can't handle this. And then I did that for ages. And then I eventually went to university. I did art history at university, but not till I was in my early mid-20s, I think.
Okay.
So I was doing a lot of other things before that. And then I worked in the Barbican after that, in the art gallery there. And then eventually I started doing stand-up and things.
Yeah. So I only found that, so you had a different name as a stand-up.
When I started, I did, but because I thought that's what people did.
Yes.
And I honestly did. I thought, I didn't know anything. And I thought that you wrote a different set each time. You know, I did think that. I thought, I can't use that. I did that at that one. You know, I didn't realize that was the way it worked. And then and then did that for a bit, and then kind of segued into other bits. And eventually, things like acting and writing and things like that.
Sure.
But the stuff I'm doing now is sort of relatively recent.
Sure. But I think, you know, it feels like an actor's sensibility. That's, I mean, in a way, it's a compliment, because you seem like a trained actor, because what you're doing, and what I love about your stuff, which is obviously all over your Twitter and your Instagram, and you kind of seem to come up with a new one every day, more or less, is it's, you know, it's very lo-fi, but you're creating characters that are very recognizable and very well formed with no props, no costumes. It's completely you, in just exactly where you are now, I think, isn't it? This is where
I
recognize that door.
Yeah. It's near enough this setup. Yeah.
But you know, you're very good at acting, so you're very good at creating those characters out of nothing. There's what I was trying to think, and there's a really good one with the woman in the Indian takeaway wearing the sari, who's got something resembling a sari.
Right. But
you're not putting on a wig or makeup or anything.
No.
It's all through the personification of the character.
Right.
Which, I mean, I find this really interesting because there's a few people obviously who've gone this internet route. And Limmy probably is the best example of someone who's made a massive success of it. But his stuff, you know, he's managed to take that onto TV with his homemade show on TV. But it sort of strikes you when you see someone doing something really good with basically no production values, and then you watch TV and there's things with incredible production values that aren't any good.
Right, right.
So why do you think it seems crazy with comedy? You don't need to spend.
Well, I had a really interesting conversation about this with a producer, actually, who was quite openly saying to me, he said, I don't know the correct amount of money that comedy requires. You know what I mean? Like exactly what you're saying, because a lot of, and I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but I mean, a lot of sitcoms now, when I watch them, they look very similar. A lot of them very good. I like it. But visually, there's that shimmery kind of thing, and the camera pans in and it's quite filmic, or there's a visual language to it whereby maybe executives or people in development or whatever, or commissioners have gone, it's got to look like that. It's got to look like that. So they've looked at one thing that's successful and then it's kind of replicated. So they all look kind of similar, you know, so I think maybe the online stuff is a sort of kind of, not an antidote to that, but it's kind of something quite different.
Yeah. Well, I've always liked that immediacy and the fact you can get on with stuff and just do it and then you can present it to an audience. But is it a deliberate choice or is it just necessity that's made you?
No.
Because obviously you could spend a bit more money. You could spend more money on it if you wanted to now, I presume, but you still do it the same way.
I mean, the most I'd spend on it is like a mad prop, like a dumb prop. The sari thing, I wanted one, like a lot of them, I want one prop or just, there's another one I did about a very tense family dinner and I had a ticking clock in the background and that was it. Yeah. Not even, I think a wig, the joke becomes the wig then. You know, it becomes, then you're doing something big, you know, and a lot of what I do is not big. It's very minute moments in England. Like that's what they are. There's a little snapshot of a thing. Like the woman in the takeaway, in the Indian takeaway, as soon as you wear a wig, it's, he's wearing a wig. Yeah. You know, you've lost, you forget it. That's not what it is. With the thing,
you can do a gesture
like the sari, you can do that stuff.
But you quickly forget, you watch them and you go, oh, it's a man pretending to be a woman, but you sort of almost instantaneously forget, you know, it's so strong. And I don't know, it just sort of feels like, why not make 1,000 things like that rather than one highly produced, you know, like you say, the slightly derivative sitcom or sketch show.
I think it would take away from it, if anything. I don't know why. I think you could maybe go slightly bigger production, maybe do it in just a white room or something, but I think you do have to make a virtue of that sort of element of it where it's just done with a phone in a front room. But in answer to the question, the reason originally was necessity. I did a couple of things with Diane Morgan. We filmed a couple of like funny little sketches and we were talking about doing other stuff, but you know, if you film anything, it's like, well, who do we know a DOP? Do we know someone who works the sound? And then getting everyone together and going, can you spend a day on this thing for no money? There's nothing in it. We're going to put it on YouTube, you know. And that's the other thing. YouTube as well, for me anyway, it doesn't get the traction that social media does. So then you've got to go, okay, if we film something, we've then got to compress it to chuck it on what? So someone can watch it on a phone. Who's going to, you know. So I think that stuff is quite recent about that idea that, okay, not that there's, I think there's a lot of people making really great short films that do, you know, there's a place for all that stuff. But So just in terms of like, and then I started looking at all the ideas I had, and I was like, why can't I just do it on a phone? And I only found one that I couldn't do. And even then I was like, no, I could do that. I could just cheat it. And once people watching it in on that notion that this is going to look shit, I am not, you know, I'm not watching this for production value. Like once you address that, Twitch is a similar thing in that way, isn't it? Because you're having fun with that kind of DIY ethos of going, look, it's a camera in my bedroom. I'm mocking up a ridiculous background behind me. I'm literally talking about you here. This is absurd.
But it's sort of, well, look, A, it does, you know, A, with stuff like the stuff I'm doing and in a way the stuff you're doing, I mean, it's not entirely true, but it's sort of it's kind of throwaway. There's no point in spending lots of money on it. It's a little moment in time.
Yeah.
You can, I think with yours, they're very good fun to watch back. So it's, you know, it's the experimentation of it I just sort of think most people don't care. You know, most people don't care about even their movies. You know, you spend millions and millions of pounds making a movie look amazing. And actually, the movies are shit and derivative, and it's another man punching another man dressed in a funny costume for 10 minutes. It's a video game. You go, I'd rather just watch two people having a chat.
Yeah.
And, you know, and don't worry about even changing the camera angles. We don't, it's all, you know, unless the film's, unless everything's genius and you think, well, everyone they've got together is amazing. It's the best of the best. But actually, as a viewer, I would rather watch you being funny. And the interesting thing, because you have taken these short videos and you present them in the cinema as I heard you saying that it didn't, you tried to do them as stand up and it didn't work in that environment as doing some stand up, but it's working as an hour long show of an hour of them put together. And,
yeah. It's about, the first one was about an hour and 20 or something like that. Right. But yeah, I did it at a kind of sketch night where I showed one on a screen and then I tried to act one out, but it was hard because once people laugh, you don't realize what they're laughing at. You know, it's a weird thing. And I realized that when I showed the first film in the cinema, I was going, and there's no easy way to say this. People laughed a lot. that's what happened. So, and I was like, oh, I had no idea that just the things like, you know, or all that kind of stuff. I was like, really? Okay. So if you do it live, it's not written with jokes. And I think if I was to go down that road, I would have to write it if you write stand-up, it's you go, okay, I'm talking for this bit, there's a laugh there, or whatever, I'm calling back to this or that. And so to get away from that, it has to be done online, really, and then just see where people laugh. And it is slightly more scattered. Some people find some stuff really... I mean, there's a couple of very odd videos I've done that I've no idea why people like, but they've sort of become this thing that people kind of find funny. But the idea was, I mean in my head I was like, well, why shouldn't it be a film? It's not got a conventional narrative of a film. There's not, you know, it's not a three act structure or whatever. It's comprised of videos of a minute or 2 minutes, but it's still, you know, in my head it's still a film. I remember as I introduced it at the Prince Charles, this is what I kept saying, they kept laughing. I was going, what are you laughing? I'm being deadly. You wouldn't say this to Lars von Trier. You need to show me respect. This is, but you know, I don't, but you know, it's sort of a joke, really. It's sort of taking a piss a bit. And I go, you know, that's part of the funny.
But what's good about you, you've always got that slight detachment, you know, even when you're tweeting about stuff, you know, going, yeah, I've saved lockdown kind of, you know, thanks to, you know, comedians, all the work we're doing to help people through COVID. it's all with this tongue in cheek that is the kind of ethos of the actual pieces as well, but they're so acutely observed. Are you sort of scanning social media, or is it just is it sort of coming to you naturally? Because they seem, you know, it's observational comedy without being, well, have you noticed the kind of person who does this? You know, it's proper observations that are quite unique as well. I think, I don't think it is that mannerisms, and it is that type of sort of everyone's smug, really, isn't it? It's the smugness of all sides. It's you're not really taking sides in any of these things. Just point out people who are being dicks.
Not really. I don't like that kind of. I don't like that kind of sledgehammer satire of like, this person idiot, you got to think like this or whatever. I prefer to present a thing, and then it's really up to people what they make of it. But there's, I mean, The one with just going back to the woman in the takeaway, it's not really a, that one's not really a satire. That's really a story about someone who's, I don't know what her thing is, but there's a bit in it where she goes, well, I mean, I'll eat this with my fingers. If you saw my husband, he left a knife and fork, you know, that kind of, yeah. And there's a hint of like a marriage that's not great. And, you know, she's a lonely person. She's involving herself. She's trying to do the right thing, but she's saying all the wrong things. Most of them are sympathetic, I think. But most
I think they
of them
are, yeah.
As well, are sort of, most of them are people that I know from Romford, really. I very rarely do any accents of anyone else, mostly because I can't. I'm just not, I just feel dumb doing that. Or it just feels weird to me doing that. Or I don't want to do big things like that. But they're also all, they're not, the people are all kind of what you would call, they're kind of middle class, but they're not in the middle class sense that people go, most people misunderstand class, and they go, oh, a middle class person talks like that. They don't. No one's done that since that Two Ronnies sketch or whatever it is. That doesn't exist anymore. That the class structure now is very different. So the people I do are kind of would they sort of maybe come from working class backgrounds, but they're now done all right at some point, and they've kind of I guess what would have been called nouveau riche maybe, but I don't really know. It's kind of I don't know. I find that stuff quite hard to pin down. What they are, but it's certainly not.
But I think that's, you know, but the everything, like you say, it's the depth, it's the backstories. I think having accents and different voices. I mean, I did a sketch show about history, and you know, you do a sketch set in France, and everyone's doing sort of stupid French accents, and it actually detracts from the writing, you know, because you're just doing a stupid accent.
Yeah.
So in the end, it said, look, let's not. We shouldn't ever do accents, you know, that we're talking in English, but they don't need to talk with a French accent.
Right.
We're losing all the actual comedy of the sketch.
Yeah.
And getting just comedy of a stupid voice. So I think it's all with the looks. What was it that made you realize this was going to be a thing? I remember one of the early ones I saw, I don't know how early this was, which I really loved, was you taking off the guy on Question Time who said, Ireland is the island of Ireland. So it's an island, so treat it like an island because it's the island of Ireland. And you had him go to his mate, I'm going to have thought this thing, it's Ireland, it's an island, isn't it? And so I'm going to go on question and forget, is that?
Yeah.
And then we cut to the clip and then you coming out going, how'd it go? Had you been going for a while at that point, or was that?
I'd already done it for a while,
Right.
But it's just like, so there's nothing funnier than someone who's absolutely certain. I mean, I remember we were talking about this in terms of your book when we're talking about the Serena Williams thing, where the absolute certainty of people who are like, no, I'm going to say this. I'm going to tweet this. I'm not having him tweet that and not reply. You know, that kind of thing of like, or going on Question Time and going, imagine that. It's going out on television in front of hundreds of thousands of people. There's hundreds of people in the audience. Yeah, thanks. What I think, it's insane. What's going? Because and then I started thinking, well, he must have said to someone, "I'm going to say it," and his mates have gone, "You should say that." Yeah, say Ireland is an island. People will love that. It's insane. Who does that? But one of the first ones I did, I was outside. So most of these people came from. Brexit opened up this thing, I think, of now people just say what they fucking want. Like, I don't think that guy would have said that on Question Time before Brexit. Now, maybe it's to do with winning the referendum, maybe, I don't know. I think it's bad on both sides, really. And now he's got some confidence. Yeah, this island is an island.
No, but I think it is, well, social media, which is what it's a parody of, isn't it? And it's social media's made everybody think. And the news, the way the news works, made everyone think that their opinion is equal to every, you know, that every opinion is equal, that we all have the right to say what we want. You know, that's why the referendum is like, we've all had our say, and this is our say, and so we have to do it because it's what, regardless of what is going to happen, we've all agreed on this thing, which, you know, is true or not, whatever you want to look at it. But that social media has given, I was just thinking when you were talking about the Serena Williams thing, how much fun you have with that guy. The guy who was very, because we did an extra bit in the book about the Serena Williams thing of the tweets I had subsequently, and there was a guy who was just really insistent. He didn't play tennis, but the thing that really gave you, because I think you do play tennis, don't you? And his bit was, thing is, she would I'd run around and confuse her
And so she'd have to go for the base.
She'd have to go for the base her. Like a magician. Oh my god.
And like she's going, fuck, no one's sort of.
Yeah, she's going like that. Why does he stand still?
I don't know where to hit it.
Yeah.
He's running around. I'm pretty fast. I'm just running around, and she'd have to go to the baseline.
Yeah.
To beat me. And then she would. but you know, that is, I suppose that is, but it's just human arrogance, and I guess
right.
the social media just it amplifies it, doesn't it? All these people in the asking about international.
Well, the first one I did, maybe the first one, I can't remember, was during that referendum. I spent quite a lot of time. I used to go down to Westminster and just hang around, and you had loads of people, and they're almost divided into factions. The Leave people with the Brexit umbrellas, and the Remain people were like trying to walk around giving people cupcakes and all that. So you had these groups, and they all knew each other. And that guy Steve Bray there with his loudspeaker and all that stuff. And I remember seeing a guy with a UKIP umbrella, and he was talking quite confidently to this other guy, and he was saying to him, no, because what you've got there on your hat, that is a swear word, and I wouldn't use that word personally. So this guy had on his hat bollocks to Brexit. So the guy with the UKIP umbrella was so funny. He's going, maybe I've had a different upbringing to you, but I wouldn't use that word because that is a foul word to me. I don't know. Now, if it said rollocks, now that would be clever because rollocks are the placeholders for oars on a boat. Like, it was just this insane argument, but he had so, and it was really, and I did that video when I got home almost verbatim, and a few people sort of retweeted that, but it didn't have a proper, I don't know, but it was the first one I did that was a whole scene where you've got a kind of idea of a person and what they're like, you know, and without jokes, without anything that could be recognised as a comedy, just a literal, very real conversation of a person. So that was probably the first one where I was like, oh, okay, right. No, go on.
So it's quite interesting that because I think the internet has been like in the 90s, and when I came to London, there was Speaker's Corner. If people wanted to complain about TV shows, they'd write in green ink. You know, they were all seen as these conspiracy theorists, were all seen as these kooks that you would go and like almost go and spectate at various places, like you were doing there in Westminster. But the internet has sort of turned, I find it sort of fascinating the way that the internet has become like Mary Whitehouse would love the way Twitter's become, that, you know, anyone complaining about a joke. Moussa Lane made a joke yesterday about, you know, Charles Darwin's notebooks got stolen. And he said, if you are going to steal notebooks, then Charles Darwin is the natural selection. Right. Yeah. And then someone got angry about that joke, I think, because they thought he was showing off that he knew. He said, everyone knows what natural selection is. You're not clever for making that. Whether they were upset that the joke had just was about it was too soon to make a joke about some notebooks being stolen 20 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've become this, you know, the majority almost seems to have become the Mary Whitehouse Brigade, the conspiracy theories are very mainstream, and sort of Speaker's Corner is, you know, the internet has become Speaker's Corner and that Westminster kind of character.
Yeah.
Isn't it? So it's sort of fascinating the way, I guess, that, you know, the internet has turned that thing that seemed a very, you know, fringe thing into sort of on the way to being mainstream, right? Which is what you're picking up on, I think.
Well, yeah, but I only picked up on that. So the stuff I've done for maybe this year is it's really noticeable how big that thing is now with 5G, anti-vaxxers, all that stuff. Where, as you say, it was a fringe thing. And a little while ago, you might remember, there was a protest in Trafalgar Square. I actually couldn't remember what it was for, maybe not wearing a mask or whatever these people do. But there was an amazing photograph that you might have seen on Twitter. And it was of Trafalgar Square with the National Gallery in the background. And an oldish man, maybe he's in his 70s, had unfurled a British Union of Fascist flag. do you remember this? So he'd unfurled it and he's just standing there like that. There's a couple of guys next to him just looking out like that. And in the foreground, just underneath him, are two women just going like this. Like look like they've come in from Kent or Essex or whatever, and they're just having a chat like that. And I thought, it's a brilliant photo because there's so many questions there. There's like, there's that Trafalgar Square thing was really interesting. Have you ever seen any footage of people being interviewed there? Because it's people from all walks of life. And people, David Icke was talking, but you'll also have people there going, now, I'm not here for him. I don't believe in the lizard people, but I just want to see what it's about, really. And that kind of thing where people are hungry for, they want to know what's going on here. But that flag thing, so first of all, where has he had that for, like, who is he that he's not even in UKIP. He's gone UKIP. They're practically the Marxist League. He's got out that, so what? He used to belong to that because I don't think, as far as I'm aware, the British Union of Fascists has not existed for some time. Or if it has, why? But he's fought, finally. He's gone up in the loft, you know, and unfurled it. But I was thinking that about, there was another one where, it might have been the same march, where they went down to protect the cenotaph from this mythical idea that Black Lives Matter were going to come down and like burn it or whatever no one was going to do. So they said, there was a rally, we got to form a ring around the cenotaph. And there was, I would say, at least 20% of them had German army helmets on, like vests and all that, you know. And I was like, how, first of all, how have they got there? How have they got in the on the train? Like, do they say to their wife, like, where are you going with that? Oh, no, you know what I mean? Like, how are they explaining that? On the put it on the train. Yeah. See your ticket, sir. Yeah. Like, it's insane. So first of all, you've got to have a big bag if you're carrying an army helmet. And then you're in Trafalgar Square with your big rucksack. It's quite heavy as well, a proper army helmet. So you're walking around to try and see people that look a bit like you, a bit sort of military. And then you stand by them, and at some point you're thinking, I'm going to put it on. I'm going to put on my army helmet in a minute. Like, what are you waiting for? And then you put it on, and someone goes, oh, nice one. You go, yes. Fucking result. Yeah. There was another thing like that. I went to, I'm really interested in all that. I went to the night when, I think it was the night when, I've forgotten like what, it was some significant night in Parliament Square where either it went through that Brexit was realised or whatever it was. We're leaving the European Union, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And it was packed. So it was a Brexit celebration. It was packed. Nigel Farage was speaking on I think it was on a big screen, actually, in Parliament Square. And all these people had come dressed up. So Union Jacks. And there was one guy dressed as a knight. And he had full knight armour, like chain mail, the hat, the St. George's bag. And again, I was like, did you drive? Like, but where do you park in Westminster? How are you getting it on? It's a cold night. Is it like, was it like medieval times where someone has to put it on? Like, and then you walk around. And then he had loads of people putting it on. Oh, no. People went like this. People dressed normally went like this. Oh, mate. Like, as if just, like, yeah, nice one. Finally, we can dress up as knights. Eat that, Greta. Finally. It's madness. Go like that. Yeah, thank you. Thank God. How was the rally? You're not going to believe. You're not going to believe what I'm going to wear to work tomorrow. It's happened. I'm coming out. I'm coming out as a knight of the realm. It's mad.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Oh dear. But I mean, it is funny, and those, and that's what's you know, great about you, I think, is just sort of that your logic with it it's not the first thing people would many comedians would think of that angle and the angle you take on all these things. And I guess it's the great thing about the internet that we are sort of promised to the internet, and that is happening with the internet, that you're able to, you know, sidestep all the gatekeepers and make whatever you want to make and put it out and find your audience. And it's been, you know, how long was it, do you think, that it took to become sort of, I mean, it's not exactly mainstream, but it's probably Twitter mainstream, right? It's sort of it's a thing that probably gets handed around between people who, you know, you wouldn't expect. I mean, I think you were on I heard you on a podcast with Lucy Pinder. Is she the ex-glamour model? Mm-hmm. And her and her friend were saying, oh, I got this and I've been forwarding it to this. And, you know, and they're not the first people you would expect to be. They were great. And I really like them, by the way, but they do a great podcast. But they're not the first people you expect to kind of be finding this sort of more cutting edge comedy. But online, you're able to sort of find that audience. And
It crosses a lot of. I think a lot of people look at those sort of characters and go, Christ, yeah, do you see? And a lot of people are exposed to those characters now through seeing them on the news, or Facebook is a big one. Everyone's got a mad relative on Facebook who goes, what's my aunt talking about? Like, you know, who will suddenly post something like, please share if you think we should be allowed to fly the Union Jack. And like, that, you know, like a thing that no one's ever said you can't, you know, that thing of like, everyone knows these kind of people. That's the most response I get, is people tagging in people going, oh, who's this remind you of? You know, because right. it's someone they know, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know. So the last year, the thing of people going mad is like relatively recent, I think. Because when I started, I was doing kind of Brexit-y people. And I don't mean specifically people who voted Brexit. I mean that kind of attitude where it's coded racism, where... Yeah. That's why I think it's that you see a lot of films about racism or film about white power and stuff like that. But a lot of racism is very coded in language, and it's very everyday. And it's, you know, the way people talk and the way, you know, the way they interact with other people. And it isn't explicit, you know, and they think they're not, of course.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting, I mean, I think the issue is, you know, people have been, I mean, what the from their point of view, I think minds weren't changed, right? They were just told you're not allowed to think those things. And if you don't change people's minds, then that's not the way to do it, right? If you just go, you're not allowed, sorry, you can't say it, you're not allowed to say that. You have to change it. So when Trump and Brexit happened, people were going, I'm allowed to start, isn't it just me? Or is this not a thing? You know, and that's where it's come from, isn't it? It's people having all this stuff repressed for 10, 15
years. It's also people told that they're bad. You're morally in the wrong. You're going, wait, it's the worst thing you can hear. You're like, wait, I've been a bad person my whole life because I've said that word? That, you know, and then you've got two choices. You can either toe the line and accept your entire life has been morally wrong, or you can go, nah, I'm not having it. That's why I think that's interesting, was that Lawrence Fox moment on Question Time when he said... Well, that thing when it was really his moment when he blew up. People didn't know who he was. And he suddenly said, people are sick to death of having to watch what they say. It was something like that. And it got a massive round of applause. And watching it, I was like, oh, okay. It's so exactly what you're saying. We've been repressing it. So the idea of the kind of liberal, you know, Remainy, David Cameron, Tony Blair type country, that the hugger hoodie and all that stuff. Was it really true, the idea that we had of ourselves as like, we're a pretty good country, actually, all told. Now, I don't know. I'm not sure about that anymore. That idea that Britain has of itself, I think now is so confused and you know, even to, if we're talking today, like Rishi Sunak cutting the foreign aid budget and stuff like that, and we're, you know, you can't really, and if that's a thing that polls well, which I suspect it will, are we still really giving ourselves a pat on the back and going, this is the best country in the world, you know? we're still telling ourselves this lie that's, I don't know. I don't know if that's true anymore. I think it's a comforting thought of going, it's kind of a goggleboxy thought, isn't it? That like, deep down, we're good. We're deep down. And I go, well, show me the evidence for that. You know, you can't just say it. Yeah.
We're really nice. We're just on the outside. We're horrible pricks.
Yeah.
No, it's a strange one, but it is great to see. It is great to see, you know, in comedy terms, it's just such a great response. What conspiracy theories do you think are true, though? Which ones do you think are right?
I probably have got a couple, actually.
Yeah.
Probably.
Okay.
I actually have not delved into them in any most of them. Most of the time, when I think about conspiracy theories, I try and wrap my head around how someone has arrived at the mad, like the lizard people or something like that. I go, whoa, let's break this down. Tell me how. I want to come on board with you. I'll make that leap, but tell me how that people are lizards or whatever. The other stuff, you know, what can you do? Something like 9/11 or whatever, where people are just going to piece together like thousands of dots. How can you argue with someone who goes, well, have a look at this. How do you explain this? A shard of 3-millimeter fuselage from the plane, you know, all that stuff. You go, I don't know, whatever, mate. I don't know. Have you got any that you think, oh, yeah, that's
I true. Think. Paul McCartney died in 1965, was replaced by a lookalike who has slightly different ears. But then made lots of references to it in their songs.
Yes.
Just a little wink at it, just to go, can you get me?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, things like Kennedy, you go, oh, yeah, there was a conspiracy to cover up.
Al Murray, I talked about his book recently, is, you know, but he's very much of the cock-up rather than the conspiracy. I mean, it was a conspiracy to shoot JFK, but it was a conspiracy just of Lee Harvey Oswald on his own trying to shoot out the window. And that's still a conspiracy of a kind. But, you know, he looks at Sarajevo in the First World War, and basically the assassination of Franz Ferdinand was a series of cock-ups, and that the actual assassination went wrong, and then they drove the wrong way, and then another assassin just happened to be sitting in a cafe and had a gun. I'll have a shot. And, you know, that made quite a big difference. And it's the cock-up theory of history. People don't want to believe that things are that random. Nearly all of them, you think about the number of people, the moon landing, the number of people who'd have to be involved in that to make that work. And not one of them at any point chips out. Paul McCartney, at no point did someone go, hey, I could probably make a bit.
Yeah.
He revealed this piece of information.
Yeah.
I could make a bit of money out of this. You know, no one's doing that out of the thousands of
us. Yeah, the millions of people, no one's gone, wait a minute, that's Steve. I went to school with him. That's not one person.
And the pretend Paul McCartney's disappeared.
Jay
Nash or whoever he's going out with has to go, oh, sorry, you're going out. I mean, he looks like
yeah,
him.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You know, you're going out with him now.
Yeah, so. Why is he playing right-handed now? Just one day switched.
But there's got to be, you know, maybe I don't know, the prince. I've been watching The Crown, which is, you know, really, I mean, it's fascinating. It's sort of a bit like what you do on a ridiculous budget, because it's about the tiny manners and, you know, the way that families work and the way that people go mad in power, basically, and how mad it must be to be in the royal family.
Mm.
But Princess Diana, you know, that could, I think she could have been.
Yeah. That could have been a one. There's certainly, you know, my nan used to believe that. She was like, oh, they bumped her off. Yeah, they bumped her off. I mean, yeah, but she had a compelling, I'd say, why is that? She'd go, you think they'd let her marry a foreigner? You know, and you go, oh, yeah, maybe, yeah. Yeah, you might be right. They killed her off, they killed her off for that reason. It's not totally inconceivable, yeah.
No, and you know, she was involved with all the mine, you know, the people in the mine who had, who made landmines might wanted to have got it to shut up.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's a very interesting. It's sort of like I was watching it with my wife
And she said to me, we would never watch a thing about the royal family, and we'd never watch a biopic about Princess Diana. And yet we've been drawn back into the fourth series of it just because of Princess Diana. It's really weird. Again, that's the sort of hypocrisy that, you know, I'm not going to watch. I won't watch Diana, her life. Documentary. Oh, The Crown. Yes, that's fine. Olivia Colman. Olivia Colman's in it. I mean, the acting's really good. There's occasional clunky. Oh, Margaret Thatcher. Is she the one who her father was an alderman? And, But it's very, you know, it's very good. And the Michael Fagin thing, which I've always been upset. Did you hear, you know, Michael Fagin was the guy who broke into the palace and sat at the end of a
I vaguely remember the story. Yeah.
You might be too young. When I was at school, I'm sure, you know, I heard this rumour that he'd wanked into her ear, right? And I've heard a few rumours about her ear, that he put his finger in her ear or he wanked in her ear. And that didn't come up in The Crown.
So I mean, they're quite different rumours, to be fair.
Well, you know, he was doing something to her ear. He was having a crown.
Yeah.
He could have just done a wet
day.
But but then if you Google that, the only place it comes up is in my blog when I wrote about it before. So maybe I made that up.
But there would be, but I wonder if they would cover something like that up, though. If you found him there and went, oh my God, if you were the security people that come in, the guy, no, maybe not in her ear, but yeah, maybe in her ear. It's come on her ear. You can't have that in the news.
Right, exactly. Tell you,
a man has been arrested. What for? Nothing. Just broke into a room and nothing else happened.
And it would get out because one of the security guards would go to his mate, he'd get home and go, oh, fuck, you won't believe what.
Yeah.
I had to wipe the bloke spunk off the Queen's ear last night.
Yeah.
Don't tell anyone. Don't go to the King's Wessex School in Cheddar and tell the kids there about this, because they're the last people we want to get to know about this, because that's spread. But yeah, it's good. It's a good, it's a very good series. That's a very good episode, the Michael Fagin one.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. But
I haven't seen any of it.
Oh, well, it's, you know, it's sort of weird because, like, I can remember that they're now at a series that I can remember all the events. So it's the Falklands War and Mountbatten being blown up and all this stuff. And I remember, you know, I was 14 or 15 at that time. So it's the first time that kind of I really remember the news, you know. So it's sort of weird that is so disconcerting to think that, you know, your childhood is now part of history. It's, you know, it's the same as in 1980. It would be like someone talking about 1940. It just feels like, fucking hell, that was a long time ago. I'm so old. I'll ask some emergency questions. Have you ever milked an animal or a human?
Yes, I have. I've got a recollection of milking a goat.
Have you?
Maybe, I think maybe on a school trip. I can't remember, but I remembered something. We might have gone to we used to go to the zoo. I remember we used to go to London Zoo for the school trip. Quite a few times.
You're not allowed to milk the animals there. You're not allowed to milk
a
tiger.
No one knew. I walked into the reptile house, milked a lizard. No one saw it. Wanked off a lizard into the Queen's ear, left.
Yeah.
That sounds like a David Icke conspiracy.
Okay, I'll ask. Have you ever been in a plane that's been in an emergency and seen a genuine look of fear on the face of a flight attendant?
Wow. No, I don't think so. No. No.
You're lucky.
Sorry. No, don't think it's I've right. ever experienced no, okay. that.
Do you think you would make a good sheriff in the Wild West?
Wow. I mean, you'd like to think so, wouldn't you? Like to think so, because you want to be a Gary Cooper type, but then you think, what would you do if you're confronted with the big, bad, massive one with the moustache and he's coming to town? He's like, you need that. They do what they want, those people. And you don't want to be that one in the West End who's like, you call yourself a sheriff. You go, I'm the sheriff. And they go, spit on the floor. First of all, that should be in jail. You should be in jail for that. And then they just shove you out of the way and go, ha, ha. And I fall on the dirt like that. And my glasses fall off. I go, my spectacles. I think I'd be that sort of sheriff.
Yeah.
Just pathetic. And then I'd be really emasculated by a real man comes along and sorts it out. And then I have to put the badge back on and go, fuck's sake. You know?
It's a hard job. It's a very hard job. So you have been doing, you've been doing a lot of acting roles as well. You're in the Great. You play Count Smolny in The Great.
I do. Yeah.
Is that a good part, Count Smolny?
Count Smolny, very important character in Russian history. Back filming series two at the moment.
Wow, okay.
Back on it, Count Smolny. Very intriguing. Who is he? Count Smolny. Yeah, Count Smolny. I mean, you don't know a lot about him. He's got limited dialogue, limited interactions with the Queen Catherine the Great.
Catherine the Great, yeah.
But, he's a steam sealer.
Where can we see that? I haven't caught it yet.
It's really, really good show. I'm not just saying that. It is a brilliant show.
Is it on Netflix?
It's on Hulu. It's on Hulu. Check it out. There's two different productions, both involving Catherine the Great. But this one's really good. Nicholas Holt, Elle Fanning, Count Smolny, obviously the big attraction. It's a really good show. I guess it will come to some other channel at some point.
Nicholas Holt once auditioned for the ITV comedy like comedy drama I wrote, but he got the part, but he didn't want to do it.
Oh,
because it was just before he got into. I think he just got into Skins, and he went, "Yeah, I don't think this role's big enough for me." And then now he's like a massive Hollywood superstar, isn't he?
Oh, was there a Count Smolny in your?
There was. Show, I could have had a Count Smolny.
I'm available. That's all I'm saying.
I'll put him in next time.
I was available. Yeah.
I can't talk about the actual role, but it's kind of as you get older. When I was watching again, Dennis Thatcher in The Crown, I recognised the actor suddenly because he looks really like Dennis Thatcher. But then I recognised the actor. It's called Stephen Boxer, I think. And he doesn't. And in my memory, he doesn't look any. You know, he looks a lot younger. You know, he's been on TV all for the last 30, 40 years. And it's that kind of tragedy where you suddenly realise, oh. Yeah, I'm old enough to play fucking Dennis Thatcher now, and there's been a part. I really want to get it. It's a tiny part in a film, but it's a film about a cool band, let's say, and the part I've been offered is like the least possible cool part of a middle-aged man who I thought, oh, but you know, he was really old, and I looked him up on Wikipedia. And he was basically exactly the same age as me. And I looked at him and thought, I do actually quite look like him. I think I could get this part. It's that sort of tragedy of realising.
I once went up for the role of a paedophile in a dramatisation of the Karen Matthews kidnapping story. And I was fuming. I didn't get it. I was fuming.
Who got it? I think, have I talked to you about that before? I feel like I've heard that before. I think someone
else.
Someone else I've talked to got the part, or similarly, when a friend didn't get it. I usually get paedophile. If it's a paedophile part, usually the phone's ringing red hot.
Yeah.
Get Richard Herring down. He's a sex pervert of some kind. Get Richard Herring in.
Yeah.
Look, he's got a moustache now. It's too much now. He's got the moustache. It's not
believable. Yeah, is it a smack addict or a pedo? If I haven't got it, who's getting that?
And I haven't seen this, but I saw it on IMDb just now, and I really like the look of it. And I think you wrote this as a short film called Thawed, like Thawed Out.
Yeah.
Not like Thor Heard, I suddenly thought I was saying, which is about a guy who's been cryogenically frozen and then is brought back to life, but he's just a head, I'm guessing, is the premise of the...
Yeah, so me and Diane Morgan wrote that, and it's a short film of just... She was obsessed with this idea. She'd seen somewhere the front cover of the... I'm pretty sure, I'll have to ask her about this, but I'm pretty sure she saw the cover of the film Delicatessen, which is a head on a plate. And I'm sure it was that, and she said to me, do you know what? It would be so funny. Your head on a plate, but really angry. I was like, what are you talking about? And then we started talking about it. And then we were like, what if you're cryogenically frozen, but and she's my wife and she can't afford to bring back my whole body because she spent it on her own cosmetic surgery. So she just brings back my head and I'm furious. It's a nightmare. I'm just in a box and I have to go, where are you going? Like you have to keep me hydrated, spray me with a water spray. Otherwise my skin dries out. My lips go blue. Oh, it's so weird.
It's such a good idea. I really love it. Yeah.
I thought it'd be a great series. Like she has, and then she buys a papoose to carry me round in, like a little, you know, those little things you carry kids round. And I'm fuming in this papoose, going, where are we going? Why? Like, I don't like any aspect of just being a head. You know?
Yeah. Is it cheating to have sex with someone who is cryogenically frozen head if there's someone, because Walt Disney's been done, hasn't he? I think his head's in a box somewhere.
Yeah.
If he thawed him out and had sex with his head, would that be, if you know, you were married, say, I'm just thinking hypothetically, would that be cheating on your wife to have sex with the head of Walt Disney in a box?
Well, if it's a person, I guess, you know. Yeah.
It's just a head, though.
It is a head, but if he's alive in the brain, you know.
Yeah. He's got to be alive. And I'm not talking about having sex with the brain dead, like slightly revitalized corpse of Walt Disney. He's alive. He's Walt
Disney. But only his head is frozen.
Yeah, it's only his head.
Yeah.
It's his head. And I say to him, Walt, do you fancy me having sex with your head? And he goes, I'd fucking love that.
Yeah.
And that's what, and I go, are you? I just want to check, is everything working in the brain? Because I'm worried I haven't got a body. He goes, I know exactly what I'm thinking. I want this, Richard. Go ahead. Your only issue is you're married.
Yeah.
You have to think about whether this is cheating on your wife. I don't think it's cheating. Well,
no.
I think it's fine.
Do you remember just before we come on air and you said to me, we might go off on a slight tangent, but that's fine. I don't think I ever anticipated the tangent would be fucking Walt Disney's dead head.
It's not dead. I'm not going to fuck his dead head. I'm not sick. Oh, he's alive. I'm having a conversation with him.
Yeah.
I take him out first.
That's romantic.
I check him out. He's consenting. He brings up, he says, Rich, remember you're married. I go, oh, what? Just in the moment, I'd forgotten I was married. It's been such a whirlwind.
Yeah.
But my wife's not going to mind that. I'm not going to tell her about it just in case. It brings up some awkward questions.
Yeah.
It's not cheating, is it? It's not cheating.
Well, he's alive at that point. So it's up to you. I mean, it shouldn't.
It's not cheating.
It shouldn't. I mean, I know you're desperate to want to be able to have that freedom with Walt Disney, but
he hasn't got a body. I don't think you can cheat with something that hasn't got a body.
No. Okay. Well, it's not something I'm going to. It's not a particular hill I want to die on with you this evening. But if you want to do that, you go ahead.
Okay. Well, we'll see. There's a few moments to come. And I had a very soon. I saw a ghost. I saw the ghost of my son last night.
I heard that,
when he was still alive. Have you ever seen a ghost? Have you had I think it was very interesting because when I asked this question about ghosts, and a lot of people say, yeah, I was asleep. And then just as I was waking up, I saw something really weird.
Yeah.
Clearly, this was, I was asleep and it was a dream. Though I don't know. I don't even know if I said, Ernie, I don't know if I literally reached out and touched it, but it was so spooky to reach out. And he was like facing, like not me, he was facing sideways. It was really spooky. Have you ever seen a ghost? Have you ever had anything like that?
No, I haven't had anything. I mean, I'd like that, you know. I'd like to experience that, but I just don't know. You know, could you ever conceive of a time when you would have an experience like that and go, okay, this has changed my outlook? It's hard to think of, isn't it?
I think I would have to be fully awake and I'd have to fully interact. I'd have to have sex with the ghost. Ascertain it wasn't cheating to have sex with the ghost.
What's the other way?
My son. Not my son. He's not dead. I mean, I think what's interesting is that it freaked me out enough that I went and checked my son was alive. So for all for all my protestations that I'm anti-superstitious and I'm so smart, I still had to go. I couldn't go to sleep again unless I was really tired. Unless I'd ascertained that he hadn't died and that was passing through.
Don't you think this would be a brilliant film though? Supernatural investigators who the only way they can prove whether it's real or not is to try and have sex with a ghost, and they're constantly saying, "Well, we just got to summon the spirit and then try to see if we can get off with it." What do you mean? No, it's the only way. Oh, are you there? What are you wearing? Just out of interest? Yeah, the pervy.
I watched Ghostbusters with our kids. They watched it for the first time, and there's a lot. You know, I think the original Ghostbusters is the best of the Ghostbuster films. But there's a lot of stuff that you wouldn't do now. And there is a scene where Dan Aykroyd basically just gets blown by a ghost. Do you remember that scene? He's dreaming it. He dreams about this attractive ghost comes down and then she's sucking him off. And then he falls out of bed and he's been a dream. It's completely pointless because it's just a dream. They're in a film that's got loads of ghosts in it. I don't know why they didn't go, well, why don't we just have a ghost? Why don't we have a scene where a ghost sucks you off? No, that's too much. If it's a dream, then that's acceptable.
Yeah. We wouldn't get past the censors,
Because Bill Murray, at the beginning, do you remember Bill Murray's conducting that experiment where there's a male student, a female student, and they're testing if they're psychic.
Oh, yeah.
And he's basically just pretending. And my daughter's going, why is he lying? Why is he lying to that girl? Why is he lying? And we had to go, he wants her to go out to dinner with him.
He's trying to,
it's kind of, you know, again, you wouldn't do that.
No, it's tricky, those ones. It's like if a Bond film is on, one of the old ones is on at like 2:30 in the afternoon, and I was watching one the other week, and the girl, I think it's Goldfinger or something, and he's talking to a girl in a bikini, and she walks off, and as she walks off, he slaps her on the arse, and you think, oh, I wonder how, like, it's very tricky stuff like that to go, you can't, you know, what do? Put a warning in ahead of the film? I don't know the answer to that, because it's sort of like, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's historical accuracy.
Mm.
That's how things used to be. It is. It's amazing how much things have changed. It is like incredible how much things have changed. That, like, a film from the 80s can seem that. But that's from the 60s if it's James Bond. But like Ghostbusters. But it still is the same as saying, you know, it's the Wizard of Oz, isn't it? The Wizard of Oz was 40 years before the 1980s. And, you know, it was okay to have Chuck monkeys out of windows, wasn't it? With wings on them.
Yeah, different world. Yeah.
It was a very different world. What else have I got for you? Because you were called Al Stick as a comedian, stand-up comedian. The only thing I could find online about Al Stick, do you know what it is?
No.
It's your review on Chortle.
Really? Let's not talk about any reviews on Chortle now.
But that's where Chortle's terrible, because like it's literally the only thing about on the internet, and it's him going, "Yeah, I've seen him before. He's been all right," but and then it's not a very nice review.
Oh god,
it's one performance. But but you know, fuck him.
Yeah, I never look at it, so I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to send it to you.
Chortle used to be a thing, I think, didn't it? I remember it used to be...
Well, it was, but also it's just incredibly frustrating because he doesn't go and, you know, there's so many comedians that most comedians will have one review and that's it. And if they had a bad night or they, you know, which you all do. I mean, he's written a review of the book and it's quite nice, but he's always just a little bit... I did his book festival as well. And he's nice to my face. But he's always just like a little bit, it's a bit slight. The book's a bit slight. It's not that, you know, there's not much time to go into detail. It's not going to get to the people it needs to get to. But it's, you know, it's fine. It's good. It's a good review, but you'll never, like, go wholeheartedly, you know.
Right. He seems very obsessed with, like, convention, though. Of, like, I don't know. I don't like the way people talk about comedy. It goes, when anyone goes routine or there's a great little, you know, anything technical like that, I go, I don't know. It's something about it just gets on my nerves, like that idea that it's quantifiable in that way. It's very irritating. Yeah, yeah.
I think, you know, it's. I think the problem with the internet, it's good. There's lots of great things about the internet. The problem is, and I was talking to a couple of people recently about their Chortle student things still up, you know, from 2008 or something. It's their first ever stand-up and it's online. And, you know, it doesn't, there should be a delete function, you know, on stuff after
I think there is years. Though I think you can, as far as I'm aware, I think you can legally ask them to take it down and they have to.
I'm not sure if you've signed
anything,
that Chortle thing, you know, that Chortle student thing. I don't think you can. I think someone tried to get it down because, you know, they own it. You've probably signed something as a student of course I'd love, you know, I want my stuff to be online, that's great, I'll get on TV, it'll be free.
Yeah.
But it's sort of an interesting, interesting thing. But yeah, I mean, it's better to not read your review. It's a real bad one, and that's all. It's a good job you changed your name, man. That's what I'm saying.
It's the reason I did it. Yeah.
But also, I just think, you know, but that's what's interesting, that you'd think a good critic, whoever it is, would be able to see within someone who was going to go on and do something as good as you've done, that they would at least go, I can see the potential in this person. You know what I mean? Because you must have been a good stand-up as well.
No,
are you still doing stand-up?
Well, not at the moment.
Not now, no. But I was
comparing a club near I live in New Cross. But I sort of gave it up a while ago, about a year and a half ago. But in fact, it was the first place I ever started showing the videos I was doing was there. I started comparing and then showing one to see how it went down, and then and then slowly sort of transferred over. But only now when I introduced the film just to come on and, you know.
Sure. And what is coming, we're going to wind up because it's been very good fun, Alistair. Thank you very much. People must, if they haven't seen you, which I'm sure most people have, do check out Twitter or Instagram, Mr. Alistair Green on Twitter. It's just endless, endless funny stuff. What's coming up? Are you going to try and take them elsewhere, or are you just going to keep it in your own control with these videos? Are you going to carry on doing the films?
Well, I've got another. We're going to do a volume two film. So I had this idea that I'd do a volume every year. That's a kind of document of our sort of national breakdown throughout the year, at the end of the year, and then maybe tour some, maybe do it at other places around the country or something like that. Maybe I've got a couple of kind of development things that I'm maybe turning the characters into something a bit longer form or something like that. But in the meantime, just doing a lot of stuff online. I do a lot of Instagram lives now. I do little funny, little weird shows where I just talk, just improvise something for an hour, just some rubbish.
Sure. I mean, it's fun, but that's. I mean, obviously, lockdown has probably caused that to become more of a thing than it would have done. But it is. I think it's a really fascinating new area for comedians to explore. I hope more comedians come into it, because it's that idea of it. You know, the idea is scary. The idea of going, oh, let's improvise something that's an hour long. But actually, once you get into it, it's, you know, weirdly, by not having a live audience for it, you don't have the, oh no, this isn't, I don't know if this is working or not. You know, you've got to overcome that. Oh, is this just terrible?
Yeah.
But also you're not getting the negative stuff back. So you can push through and really find interesting places to go. And I don't, you know, I think you would never be doing the stuff you're doing if it was just live. You know, it wouldn't be anywhere near the same.
No.
You know, I wouldn't be doing, whatever you think of it, I wouldn't be doing the stuff that I'm doing now if it was just live. But, you know, I sort of think you do, you know, by, and then you're finding your own route through, and we're getting back to a point where comedy is created by the comedians. And then you've got once you get 5 years, 10 years or something going, it's completely its own thing. And someone can come in and go, we're going to take this, and they either can't change it or they are not able to change it because you're so into what you've got. And TV, I think, has become much too much. Come into my panel show and do something, or let's get a team of people together to be in a sketch show. It's not about finding a unique voice, which I think even in the 90s, we were still able to get a group of people. We'd do our stuff and then we'd discover our voice, you know. So I think it's a really exciting time for comedians, and I hope more comedians will get into all these various ways of getting stuff out there.
Because I don't think there's anything stopping that now. Even with stuff like, I was thinking, if I did do something bigger budget, I'd never do something very big budget, but I don't get what's stopping me. If I had a camera and a boom or whatever, or did a Kickstarter or something like that to retain control over it, it's not that difficult to do, rather than lose control of it and have someone go, hey, we love your idea, but what we're thinking is but no. Those days are gone. Here's the idea. If you don't want it, it's fine. I'll do it myself, or I'll take it elsewhere to someone who does want it. But I'm not doing that idea, you know. But I'm quite bad for it. I mean, even the idea of like, oh, we've got some notes for you. You what? How dare you? Know?
But it's great, and you know, there's a few people I think have really broken through on the internet, and there's a few people who I think are really going to break through on the internet coming up, and you and Michael Spice are probably the two kind of main ones who've, like, almost exclusively through online stuff have got yourself into a position where, you know, you're playing Count Smolny in the great, and I'm sure you wouldn't have got that if you hadn't been doing your silly stupid videos, you know.
Yeah. So
it's good stuff. So I hope we all can all get through. I worry about the future of live comedy, which I do want to get back into doing gigs live. And I hope that the venues will still be there. But I think it's interesting. You know, I think, like Rich Wilson, who I heard you on his podcast, he's like a circuit comedian who's realised how important the internet is. And he's really great on the internet as well. But that diversification has sort of got a few of us through this year. You know, the ones who'd already done that this year has probably been a lot easier for than if you go, oh, I've never thought of doing anything online and now I have to, or do nothing. You know, it's so we do have to be aware that, you know, you can't just have all your eggs in one basket. You know, got to have some.
I think it's good to have both of those things, because there will be a, there obviously will be a big boom in live comedy again once we open up. You know, everyone can't wait to get back out and watch stuff and do stuff. But I think this stuff is not going anywhere either now. It's like another thing, you know. As you say, that it's good to have a hand in both things, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think because you never dream that your entire livelihood will just be taken away with a week's notice. You know, I mean, it's absolutely heartbreaking and awful, and you know, most comedians seem to have, you know, at least kind of found a way through it, I think. And I hope the clubs and everything will still be there. Like, what do you think? March, realistically, maybe. We might be back in March. I mean, there's clubs open in December, aren't there? But I think...
Yeah.
Ah, what a depressing way to end.
It's difficult for somewhere like Edinburgh. It'll be difficult to know what to do without any certainty that, maybe clubs will open in March, or I would have thought a bit after that. But even then, what's the capacity? How certain are we? If you're talking about a vaccination program, how long does that take? I don't know.
Yeah. Long enough, I think. Long enough. Right, look, I'm going to let you go. You've been absolutely fantastic. Do check out Alistair Green. I haven't got a guest for next week's podcast yet, but someone will turn up. And Ali and Harry's Twitch are fun to Thursday nights, 7:30 p.m. at the moment. I've just recorded two sketches. I've been doing sketches in them now. It's gone nuts. I've done two sketches. I've brought back a character from 25 years ago for tomorrow. So do check that out on Thursday if you're watching this live, or go to YouTube. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. The amazing Mr. Alistair Green. Thank you. See you.
Thanks for having me.
My fine friends. No, thanks, man. It was brilliant. You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Alistair Green. Thank you to Pest for providing the music for this festivity once again. I am indebted to my director, producer and friend, Chris Evans, not that one. Thank you also to ACAS, British Comedy Guide, Ian Tunes, or the usual gang. Leicester Square Theatre, why not? I hope you're surviving through these difficult times, my fine friends, and we'll be back very soon, I hope. What else have I got to tell you? Nothing. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Why not go to GoFasterStripe.com and buy The Problem With Men with a signed book plate with a cock drawn on it and a badge? Might get you in time for Christmas, who knows? There's also lots of Christmas gifts at GoFasterStripe.com. More of my books, download DVDs, all sorts of shit you can get. Thank you very much for listening. Now go away, my fine, fine friends.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh yeah, I know all the cool words. And
would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.